Hi, friends. Welcome to Spilling the Beans podcast, where we spill the beans on all things intuitive eating, health at every size, body acceptance, and gentle nutrition. I'm your host and registered dietitian, Amanda Lambrix, and you may know me as @spillingthebeans_nutrition on Instagram and Facebook. Go ahead, get comfortable, grab a snack, and let's get started spilling the beans. Welcome back. We are quickly nearing the end of season one of the Spilling the Beans podcast. And for episode 19, I'm chatting with anti-diet dietitian Delina Soto about how she helps Latinas break free from diet culture. In our conversation, we discuss the standards of beauty and body diversity across cultures, why it's okay to change your mind about nutrition concepts, even as a dietitian, and how she helps women go back to basics with nourishing their bodies. I met Delina back in February, which feels like a lifetime ago, at the 2020 Weight Inclusive Nutrition and Dietetics Conference, which you'll often hear me refer to as WIND. And it was such a pleasure reconnecting with her for this episode. I hope you enjoy. All right, well, welcome back to the show today. Today, as I already mentioned in the introduction, we have Delina Soto, or you've probably heard of her as on Instagram as Your Latina Nutritionist or your.latina.nutritionist. She has a great following there. Welcome to the show, Delina.
Ah, thank you, Amanda. That made me feel good.
For sure. And I don't know if it's because we're in similar spaces and niches on Instagram, but I always see people resharing your posts. So I often see your face floating across my Instagram, which of course is always welcomed.
It's weird. It's just really weird to think that way about yourself.
It's such a weird world. And I remember because I had been following you on Instagram, and then we met at WIND, which is always an interesting experience because you follow all these people, and then it's like, wait, this is so weird to meet in person for the first time. And I know you have your own podcast too, which I'm sure you can share a little bit about too. I know you guys were at WIND together as well. Mm-hmm. So to get things started, can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So I am a RD in Philadelphia. I have a private practice where I see in-person clients and then a virtual practice, which is basically all through Instagram. I'm bilingual, so I speak Spanish. So a lot of my counseling is done in Spanish or Spanglish or, you know, English, whatever we're speaking. And yeah, I just love being able to really help the Latinx community, whether it is through their intuitive eating journey or just, you know, chronic illness in my in-person practice.
I think that's so cool that you have that particular niche, because before I discovered your account, if I'm thinking back, I don't remember a lot of dietitians particularly speaking to that community of women. And I imagine there's a need there. And so if you're not getting the haze or the intuitive eating advice, then it probably left a lot more of that diet culture that was still in that community of women.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I think so. I don't know. I only know a few other RDs that identify as Latina or Latinx. So yeah, so there's very few of us just even in the dietetics world and in Instagram too. Like I think I only knew like two or three more.
Which also, I mean, that's a really good point in and of itself, and certainly speaks to the conversations we've been having the past month within the dietetics community about the lack of diversity in our field. And gosh, that could be a whole other conversation of the problems within the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. But kind of shifting back to talking a little bit more about your own journey with food, how would you say your own relationship with food has evolved over the years?
So yeah, so interestingly, I feel like I've always been like a natural intuitive eater. I think I listened to a podcast episode with Paige Smathers and Diana Rice, I believe her name is. I don't want to mess up her name, but she was talking about just the intuitive eating language and how some people just continue to be intuitive even without knowing, because, you know, most of us get stripped away of that intuitive eating while we're growing up. And I feel like I connected a lot with that conversation, because looking back, I was always like, F this, I'm not going to stop eating for anyone. Like, I was always like... I've never been one to follow along with cliques or like anyone. So growing up, I was always like, whatever, I don't care kind of situation, would got me in trouble a lot. But like, especially with my mom, because she, you know, she'd be like, you have to follow these rules. And I'm like, no. But anyways, that's not the case. But, you know, the whole thing is that I always feel like I never fell into dieting. Like I never felt into wanting to restrict or wanting to, you know, change my body in any way, because I was always pretty okay with it up until having kids, and that's a whole nother story. But I felt like I was very intuitive, and then I grew up in a Dominican household. My mom is one of eight. She has five sisters. I have over 50 cousins, and I just remember always just realizing that we were all different, even with our skin color, our hair types, our eye color, like everything, our body types. We were all different, but we were all eating the same foods. And so that always stuck with me, like, okay, we're all different. I know that. And I think I always saw that diversity in my own family. So when I started dietetics, I always felt like there was something missing that I didn't know what it was, because I didn't know what intuitive eating or haze was, because they don't teach us that in school. So it was always a very like weird situation. I would always question a lot of things. And didn't have like a word for it. And then I was very late to the Instagram game. But once I started Instagram, for some reason, like all the dietitians that kept coming up were all intuitive eating and haze. And I think that's when it finally clicked. And I was like, wait, there's an actual word for this. There's an actual way. And I kind of like immersed myself in learning and understanding it, and kind of like switched over my practice at that point to be intuitive eating and haze aligned. And I haven't looked back since.
That's really cool that you had that experience growing up where you did have more of that diversity coming from a larger family. I'm like the opposite. I come from a pretty small family. So when I hear that you had like 50 cousins, I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds so much fun. I have like six cousins total. But that's also was probably kind of a blessing in disguise, as far as for, you know, your own body image journey and your own relationship with diet culture, to have been exposed to how you could all be eating these same types of foods at gatherings and still all have your diverse body types. And as you mentioned, also appearance as far as hairstyles and things like that as well. And could have more of that appreciation for diversity, as opposed to feeling like you have to conform to whatever the ideal standard for beauty is at that point in time.
Yes, for sure.
And then as far as, so you mentioned that you've always been, even before you maybe had the verbiage for it, an intuitive eater. So was it challenging going through school, hearing about more of the diet culture types of things? Because as you mentioned, we certainly don't learn about intuitive eating and health at every size when we're in school.
Yes. So I feel like I always challenged my fellow students and even professors a lot when it came to like culture. I grew up in Philadelphia, which is very, very, very diverse. And going to Penn State and like, you know, rural PA, it was like a kind of like a shock, especially. So Penn State itself is very diverse, but the dietetics program is not. And so, or wasn't, I don't know how, you know, things got changed, but, you know, as you mentioned before, the, you know, the dietetics world and the academy is not very diverse, and neither is our education. And so I remember always, you know, standing up and like saying like, well, what about this? What about that? And never really having an answer, but then kind of falling into the whole like, okay, well, I'm gonna help my Latinx community by not dieting, but still, you know, if they want to, you know, lose weight, figuring out how to help them, right? Because that's what we go to dietetics school for at the beginning. If you don't know anything, you know, it's very weight centric. And so I remember being like, it's okay, you can eat your rice and beans and we'll figure it out in another way, right? And so I always called myself an anti-diet dietitian without even really knowing what it was. And so, like I said, it wasn't really until I found intuitive eating and health at every size that I was like, okay, I have to get rid of this like weight centric piece and just really stick to the keeping our culture alive and keeping our diverse bodies alive and not trying to shrink yourself for a chart that has no idea who you are as a person or your lived experiences. So I think that it took, you know, a few years of practicing and finding Haze to make that full 360.
And that's actually, that brings up a good point too, because, and I've seen a lot of discussions recently about this, whether it's been on Instagram or Twitter, wherever, where, you know, our BMI chart and a lot of the health advice as far as losing weight or whatever really does not take into consideration the differences that we naturally have in our body sizes across cultures, right? And I can imagine that that's something you've probably noticed as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think specifically speaking to women of color, there's like a different idea of what we need to look like. So for instance, yes, there's the very thin ideal that a lot idolize, and it's more of like that Americanized look, you know, that California beach kind of looking thing. And then there's like in the Latinx community, it's very much so like, well, I still need to have a butt, I still need to have boobs, and I just need to have a flat stomach and small waist, and then nothing else will matter. And so it's, and I think like it's like that in a lot of like the African American community as well. It's like you have to be like thick. So have those body parts, but still have this like thin ideal when it comes to your midsection. And so when I would see, you know, women, they'd be like, yeah, I only want to lose weight in my stomach. Like, I don't want to lose weight anywhere else. Like, that's only where I want to focus on. And it was always interesting because if I worked with, you know, another culture, specifically white women, it was never that. It was kind of like, I want to be thin all around. And so I think it's BMI and even just health itself, like we can't compare apples to oranges, right? We know that a lot of, in the United States, a lot of the research that's done, a lot of the nutrition guidelines are done really based on Eurocentric views. And so, you know, when we're talking about, you know, make your plate half vegetables every time you eat, well, a lot of the Latino community, we don't eat like that, right? A lot of our foods are a lot of our vegetables are really root vegetables, but when you look at it, they're considered carbs. And so there's a lot of this like, all right, well, should I still be eating it? Like, should I add broccoli, which I don't even know where, you know, growing up, like broccoli wasn't a thing. It's not a thing in the Dominican Republic. Like people really don't eat broccoli. So it's like, do I need to add these veggies that I don't know? And it's always like, well, you have to eat foods that you like, so you don't have to focus so much. It's a great visual, but if that's not what you want at that point, that's okay. You can have a different type of vegetable. You can have your regular, you know, foods. You could have your rice and peas and get, you know, fiber and nutrients from the peas. You don't need to have, you know, green beans. And so I think it's a lot of that that gets lost when you're doing even intuitive eating in Haze. It's like, well, how does that apply to someone who's culture is different from American? And I think that gets lost a lot too.
I believe that. And that's a really good point about how we have this one standard accepted for the most part, my plate, where, as you mentioned, it's make half your plate, the fruits and vegetables, and then, and I can link to what it looks like if people aren't familiar with it, but then there's like a fourth of the plate is a protein source, another fourth is your carb source, and then usually there's a glass for milk. And I mean, that brings up such a good point about how across cultures, that's, I mean, heck, the average American diet certainly doesn't look like that, but across cultures, it certainly doesn't look like that. I know when I was in college, I studied abroad in China and Taiwan, and our plate when I was eating over there certainly did not look like that. And I know from, I have a friend who's from Hong Kong, I know that her plate typically doesn't look like that either. And so that's something that my privilege certainly has blinded me to, is how our recommendations for nutrition really do not accommodate across the board for all people.
Yeah. And it's like, again, if someone wants to eat that way, there's nothing wrong. And I think that that's another thing we need to figure out. Like, we need to stop shaming people. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. So it's like the shame and the call out culture, like all of that also has to kind of like subside. Like we need to just, as dietitians or as practitioners, you just have to listen to the person. You just really have to help them feel comfortable in their body and comfortable in their food choices. And for you to imply that their plate has to look a certain way kind of like takes that autonomy away. And I always tell everyone, like, it's okay if you want to eat like my plate. I certainly do most days, but there's days that I don't, and it's okay.
That brings up such a good point about how meeting people where they're at and not, you know, if they do have certain goals and they do want to have more of that, make half of their plate fruits and vegetables, and maybe they traditionally didn't do that. It's ultimately, we're listening to what they want, but also giving them guidance so that it's not turning into a diet or coming from a place of dieting. And maybe not everyone is to the point where they can fully embrace intuitive eating. And so we meet them where they're at in that moment. So I really liked what you mentioned about how it's really counterproductive to kind of have this shame that we're placing on people and kind of that call out culture, as you called it.
Yeah. And I think that it's even more of like a lot of people are afraid of intuitive eating. So if you really come at it from like an abrasive point, you might scare people away. So I'm always like, listen, it's okay if you still want to lose weight. That's just not going to be our goal. Let's just put that on the back burner and let's focus on different things and come back to that later. And it's usually a lot easier to kind of like embrace it and start learning with an open mind if you just say, listen, put that on the back burner. Let's just focus on something else for now. And if that's truly what you want to do, then, you know, you can do that later on or work with a different practitioner. But right now, let's just give it a try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do think I probably have been guilty about this when I've been very passionate about kind of fighting back against diet culture, where it probably has come across when I was first getting into it and learning and really heated up about it, that it could turn people away. Because if you're stuck in it, it can very much be taken as you're hating on the person that has embraced diet culture, when maybe it wasn't intended to be that way, but that was the impact that it had on that person. And so you could be missing someone who really needs that advice that you're giving and that approach, but the way you're coming across is not particularly warm and inviting, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, we've all done it. We've all gotten very passionate about the conversation one way or another. So it's, again, I think that, and I said this on Heather's podcast, it's like, we can't be afraid of messing up and being wrong. Like, you learn mm-hmm. along the way and you learn new things and you're able to just, you know, say, listen, this is what I said before, but this is what I feel like now. And again, it's like, we have to understand, as humans, we're going to be able to change our mind. It's okay to change your mind. It's okay to learn and decide, you know what I said last week was probably wrong, and this is what I'm saying this week because I learned this. And mm-hmm. we're so afraid of being seen as wrong.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And I think, not that all dietitians or dietetic students are this way, but we kind of have this reputation for being perfectionists or type A. So I think for that group, it's hard to admit when you may have been wrong, or I think that's just a special challenge that dietitians face. And I think, you know, when I look back too, you know, I have had to admit over the years that I've been wrong in how I initially started practicing as a dietitian, where, as we talked about, I was certainly weight-centric. I think if I would have heard of health at every size at a certain point in my career, I would have been like, that's crazy, you know, without without reading into it. Or when I was first told about intuitive eating and I saw a principle about embracing all different types of foods without guilt, I would have thought, are you kidding me? Like, that goes against everything I learned. And so I think it's so important that we do allow ourselves to grow and evolve and not feel ashamed, because that's just kind of part of the process of growing in our careers.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I'm not type A at all, so.
So you didn't meet like the very diety dietitian type A.
I do not.
So that probably made you resilient to some of the information we learned.
Probably, because I am not like that at all.
I love it. I'm definitely not as type A as I used to be. I think I've gotten a little more relaxed, or maybe lazy over the years. I don't know.
Yeah. We all have a little bit of everything, I think.
I think so too. I think that's another thing, is slapping one label on yourself can also be kind of, you know, limiting yourself as well. So we kind of talked about how you mentioned there's different body appreciation amongst different cultures. So you talked about how amongst Latinas, they don't want that more Eurocentric, thin model body type that you often hear of in diet culture. But some curves are appreciated, but still there's a bit of wanting to have the curves in certain places. So having more of that, I don't know what people say, like a snatched waist is what I hear about.
Yes, I guess yes, that is the word.
What other particular things do you find amongst Latinas in particular that they're facing as far as diet culture that might be different or unique to that population?
Yeah, so I think that if you grew up in the Latinx community, you probably grew up watching Telemundo and Univision or Univision, as we call it. And again, that look was very much it. Like, even the weather girl looks like that. And it's like a running joke. Like, you know, the weather girl, I see memes all the time of like Latina weather girls. And it's like this thing. And again, to sit there and see that growing up, like only seeing those, that particular look, like when it came to the news, when it came to novelas or TV shows or whatever the case may be, that was the only look we saw growing up. If you saw someone that was in a different body type, they were always the poor one, or more likely than not, the villain. And then if someone was of darker skin color, they were always poor. You never ever saw an Afro-Latina in TV in general up until like later in the 2000s. And then if they were, they were always portrayed as like super poor. And even like indigenous Latina women are always portrayed in a certain way. So again, like we grew up with this very Eurocentric look, especially when it came to skin color and hair. And then it was like, but you have to also have the big butt and the snatched waist. So to me, there's like all of these different nuances that we are grappling with as Latinas, and it's hard to get away from it, because it's literally what you saw the minute you opened your eyes to the minute you like went to sleep. Not maybe in your household, but definitely in the media. And so it's tough to get away from, like, well, I need to look this way, because it's literally how we're portrayed everywhere you look.
That's really interesting. As you were talking, that I was really curious about what you were talking about with the weather girls. And I Googled a picture and I'm definitely seeing exactly what you're talking about, because this is definitely not in little old South Dakota where I grew up, which is pretty rural in and of itself. That is not what my weather gal looked like.
No.
So I can definitely see how having kind of that ideal body pushed at you, even when you're watching the news, could be kind of a thing. But, and that's something too. I mean, there's so many different things I wouldn't even think of if I were the dietitian working with someone dealing with these types of problems. So I'm so glad that there's someone like you. Obviously, you can't take every single client in the world, but it's eye-opening to even be able to talk to you and hear about the different types of problems amongst Latinas.
Yeah. And you know, it's not just us. I feel like it's a lot of other cultures as well. But for me growing up, that's all I saw, right? So that's kind of all I know, especially because I only grew up watching Spanish TV. My husband always jokes around, like, he's like, you don't know anything about like American pop culture. I'm like, I do, from like the 2000s, anything before that. It's pretty much like, it wasn't until like I could change to own my own TV channel.
Oh, that's funny.
That I like now.
So did you grow up in the Dominican then?
No, I grew up here. I grew up in the United States in Philadelphia, but my parents, like, we only speak Spanish at home. And so like growing up, that was like all that was on TV. Like, yes, my brothers and I eventually definitely went on and watched, like, I would watch the Disney Channel and like Nickelodeon and things like that. But primarily it was Univision, because Telemundo wasn't even that big in the 90s. So yeah, so like there's a lot of like movies or TV shows that I'm like, yeah, I never watched that.
That's so interesting, and such a different experience than if you had watched, you know, just Disney as a very young child, but you're seeing more of these, like these women, particularly doing the news. I just can't get over that. That makes, that's funny. I know I'm going to be looking up these memes that you talk about.
I'm sure, I don't use Twitter. I don't understand Twitter, but I'm sure they're on there.
So when you're working with the Latinx community, what are some things that you found particularly helpful for the people that you're working with in your messaging?
Really just let it go of those views. Because again, I'm always like, look around your family. Do women really look like that? I mean, they're trying to achieve that look, but do they, you know, look like that? And so it's like very eye-opening to look back and see that. And then I always talk about like my experiences growing up, because that's the only experience I have. But just like, you know, my experiences growing up with my abuela, or just how our culture is. And sometimes when I'm able to say those things, you know, about our food and how we grew up eating it, it does click again, because it's like we get brainwashed by diet culture and we forget certain aspects of us growing up. And then when you start realizing and remembering and clicking again with that culture, you're like, oh, wait, you're right. Like, I wasn't afraid to eat that, or, you know, or I remember how I wasn't bothered by that and I kind of wish to go back to that. And so I think it's all about going back to basics, really, and trying to like challenge all the thoughts that you've been taught when it comes to diets, and then make a decision from there. You know, sometimes you really do like a certain food. Sometimes you're afraid to eat the food because you're afraid you're dieting. But it's like, listen, just step back and look at it from a neutral perspective. Do you like it? Do you not like it? Okay, move on. A lot of the times it's taking what we're learning with intuitive eating and then being able to apply it to our Latinx community. Or I've worked with other women from other cultures as well. Like, there's certain things that get like kind of lost, like boundaries, and setting boundaries in the Latinx community is like not a thing. So so like learning to be able to do that in a way where you're not seen as being rude or malcriada, as we call it. Like, that's really hard because you don't speak a certain way to your elders. And so to be like, oh, mom, like I need to set these boundaries, that's not a thing. So you have to come at it from a different situation or a different way. And so that's kind of what like I focus on with my clients. It's like, how do we take intuitive eating and how do we translate it to our culture so that, again, you can be successful with it? And when I say successful, I'm not saying like you're going to be able to do it for the rest of your life. It's just like, how are you going to be able to just like be able to challenge the thoughts as they keep coming up, because there's always going to be something, and this isn't something that you're just going to get to and be like, yes, I'm an intuitive eater, I never ever ever will have a diet idea or thought again. It's more of like, okay, when I do get those diet thoughts, how am I going to deal with it? And so that's what I try to kind of like teach.
I think it's making you more flexible to deal with not only when the next diet trend comes up and you're able to look at that through more of this intuitive eating, non-diet lens, but you're able to get through it. You know, you just have that flexibility. And sometimes I always tell people, you know, it's pretty normal throughout your intuitive eating journey. You know, you kind of mentioned that it's not like you just get to this one place and you're done and you celebrate because you're an intuitive eater. I mean, there's going to be many setbacks along the way. Maybe you, for example, go through a life change like a marriage, or you have a child and you find yourself kind of set back wanting to look a certain way in your body, or you don't feel good in your body and you may kind of have to recalibrate a little bit, but you still are kind of set up with that lens, and working with a dietitian can certainly be helpful in keeping you along that guidance.
Yeah, it's a lifelong journey.
It certainly is. I know you offer services. So I'm wondering if you can tell listeners about where they can find you, what types of programs or services that you offer, and also if you would be willing to tell a little bit about your podcast.
Awesome. Yes. So I offer one-on-one coaching and also group coaching. And all the links can be found on my Instagram, which is your.latina.nutritionist, or my website is yourlatinanutritionist.com. pretty straightforward. And my podcast is with No More Guilt, who's Melissa Landry, and she's awesome. Our podcast is called Break the Diet Cycle. It's really, really new. We only have 4 episodes as of now in June. I don't know when this is going to release, but we're just kind of talking to anyone who's on the fence with intuitive eating and just doesn't know what to expect. And so we're answering a lot of those questions of like, that we hear from people on our Instagram or past clients, just like, do I really want to do this? I really don't understand it. And so we're answering kind of like those questions. And that's about it. I'm not a good promoter of myself.
Well, I'll make sure to give a nice intro and outro to promote for you so you can continue to be humble. But I do have to say, I love the concept of your podcast because I think a lot of times podcasts out there, probably my own included, or like the one I often think of is Christy Harrison's, where, you know, she's been around for quite a while doing her podcast. So it's, you're kind of already in that world, whereas yours is a really nice starting point for people who are on, as you said, on the fence and not really sure if they want to embrace this or they have a lot of fears. And so you're able to answer some of those questions and hopefully help put people at ease of what maybe they can expect if they embrace this journey. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, and hopefully we can meet up at another wind event, although with everything going on in the world with COVID, who knows when that will be.
I don't know, but yes, I would love to meet everyone again in person.
Yes.
Or see everyone again in person someday.
Literally anyone.
Anyone.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for Delina. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
Thanks, Amanda.
That's our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in, and thank you to Anchor for again hosting my podcast. Be sure to download and subscribe this podcast on Apple or your favorite streaming device. If you're looking for ways to get started on your own journey towards food freedom, head over to my website at spillingthebeansnutrition.com/course to get started on my self-paced course. If you need more individualized help, I also offer virtual coaching, and you can get in touch with me at spillingthebeansnutrition.com/virtual-coaching. To get show notes from this episode, you can go to spillingthebeansnutrition.com/podcast. And of course, if you're not already following me on Instagram or Facebook, I'm at spillingthebeans_nutrition. Our album art was photographed by my very own little cousin, Brittany Preller, and our theme song was written by Daniel James O'Connor and is used under the Creative Commons license.